Today is November the 7th, 1990, and I'm talking to Mr. Jim Young, who now lives at Colts Hill, but you were living in Pembrey most of your life, weren't you?
Well, no, not most of my life, because we've lived at Colts Hill now for 53 years.
Oh, have you?
Yes.
Still, it's all really part of Pembrey, I suppose.
Well, yes, yes. As a matter of fact, I used to live right opposite you. Can
yes,
you remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
Now, how long did you live there?
Well, you know, I can't remember whether we came up there, whether I'd just left school or I hadn't quite left school. Because just before I left school, Mr. Russell, the butcher, do you remember Russell the butcher there?
Russell,
that's right,
he?
Yes, mm. Yes. Well, he said, would I like a job on Saturdays delivering meat? And so I said, yes, I would. And so I used to go every Saturday morning on the meat delivery. And sometimes during the week, when I came out of school, he might call me and say, oh, I've got an order to go up in the village. I think, will you run it up for me? And so on, and for that I got 3 and 6 months a week.
Did you?
Yes. Anyway, then just as I was about to leave school, he said, would I like a regular job? And I said yes. And I can't remember whether we were still at Lower Green then, or whether we had just moved up here.
I'm a bit vague about that. These houses were built in 1926-27. So you would have been...
Oh, well.
16.
Oh, yes.
If you were born in...
Oh, I'm 1910.
Ah.
So I would have been 16 or 17 then, wouldn't I?
You would.
Oh, I must have left school then, because I left at 14.
Yes, so people usually did in
yes,
that
that's
space.
Right, yes. Mm. Yeah. Because, you see, when I started... for Russell, we were living sort of next door to the butcher shop there. Can you remember there was another shop next door to that?
Yes, it was the cobbler's.
That's right. Well,
was
well,
it then?
No.
Oh.
Well, yes, it was. No, not then. It wasn't, because originally, as going back as far as I can remember, my father had it.
Did he?
Yes, because he had. This was after the First World War. He had a baker's business in Hastings Road. You know where the car sales place is?
Yes.
Well, there. There's a... Go up in the back where they've got their workshop. That used to be a bakehouse and a loft over the top. And in the front was Mr. Walker's shop.
Yes, my mother used to work there.
That's right, yes, mm. I remember she did, yes.
Mm.
That's right. Well, then, at that time, we were living in Hillview.
Oh.
Yes.
Along with that, Kent.
That's right, yes. In that row, I think I can remember nearly everybody there. Starting at the top, was Dan Collins.
Yes, I remember Dan.
Yes.
He had a...
Shoemaker's.
In the village.
He had a... No, he used to have a... He had a big shed up there where he used to do his snobbing.
Oh.
At the side of the house. And then, I don't know quite when it was, but after a time, Valentine's had a shop in the village, which is a paper shop now along the road. And Dan Collins, I don't know how they worked it, but they swapped over. Dan Collins had that as a shoemaker's, and Valentine's came to live in Hillview.
Oh.
So, originally it was Dan Collins, but then it was Valentine's, and then us, and then originally Sam Martin, before he went down to the other one on the road.
Yeah.
And then Rendell's, and then Seymour's, and then Kemp's. Going right the way down.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes. And, well then, we moved from there. I suppose Dad wanted this shop down next to Russell's, and there was a house at the back of it, because there's, I don't know if you can remember, there was the butcher shop, this shop with the house behind, and then three other houses joined on.
That's right.
Ron Steadman and his grandmother lived in one. My wife's mother and father and them lived in the next one, and Bailey's lived in the other one.
Yes.
And
yes, I do remember those.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Funnily enough, the one in the middle where my wife's mother and father lived, my father was born in it.
Was he?
Yes.
Well,
yeah, that's rather strange, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. And as I say, he took that house with a shop to it, and I can't remember how long for, but he had a breakdown and he had to give up baking, he had to give it up, and he was ill for a bit. And then we came up here. And but somebody, well, you wouldn't remember anyway, would you? But somebody lived in that house before us. I don't think they were there very long.
Oh.
But we weren't the first tenants, not when it was new.
You were?
No.
Only my parents came into this house in 1927. That's how I know more or less when they were built.
Because yes.
They came into a new house.
Yes, yes.
And I know one or two people did move around. They didn't stay very long. Because we had Mr. and Mrs. Wheeler next door.
That's right.
And then they moved that to the other
one. The other one, that's right, yeah.
And some people by the name of Fletcher came in this side.
Yes.
And they didn't stay all that long, because the Knights moved.
The Knights came in, yes.
About 5 years later.
Yes.
So, yes, it could have been that, I think probably at first there was a little bit of coming and
shuffling
going.
Shuffling around, yeah. And yeah, then you had John Taverner next to Knights, didn't you?
They were not the original people.
No, I don't think they were they? I can't remember who was there first.
There was a Mr. and Mrs. Cracknell somewhere. Whether they were there, I think they might have been.
Then I can't remember.
Mrs. Kitson.
Mrs. Kitson and her boy and girl, wasn't
that's
it?
Right.
Yes, that's right.
Mm.
Yeah.
Then a lot of the other people that lived in the avenue stayed here for many, many years.
Yes, oh yes. Yes, they did, didn't they? A lot of them stayed for a long, long time, didn't they?
On the corner.
That's right, yes.
The Tullys down at the bottom.
And standings round the corner there at...
that's right.
Nessie was one of my girlfriends at one time for a little while. And,
was she?
Yes. Yes. Yes, it was...
Testers.
Testers, that's right, yes, yes. Oh, yes.
Mm.
Of course, we had two Testers here at one time, didn't we? Because Testers were next door to us.
Yeah.
Because it, one of our boys was killed on a motorcycle.
Oh, was he killed? I remember him having the motorcycle with the sidecar, didn't he?
No, I think you're thinking about Bert Tester from round the corner.
Oh.
This was a different family of Testers altogether lived next door to us, yes.
Oh.
And I believe I had two boys, I'm not quite sure. You know, I know one was killed on the motorbike, and then Bert round the corner, he had one, and he at one time he did a fish round, didn't he, with the motorbike
that's
and
right.
sidecar.
Mm.
Yeah, I can remember that.
Then French's on the corner had a dairy, didn't
he? Oh, yes, French's. Well, French's, when my dad had the baker's business in the Hastings Road, that's when I first remember Mr. French. He came... I don't know. I don't think he lived here then. I don't know where he lived. But he had a dairy in Hubble's Farm.
Oh.
And he had a horse and trap. He used to have his churns in this horse and all. I remember all brass, highly polished, you know. And his trap was always painted up yellow and white, and it was really smart. And he used to stable his horse, ran in. Because where the bakehouse was, there was a stable there, and I think there was about three stalls in it. And Daddy got two horses, I think, so he let Mr. French have the other one to keep his horse in. And of course, got quite friendly, I suppose. And then he came up here and had his dairy in the sort of garden there, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because I can all remember that. And I my eldest brother, had a little old Austin 7, I think it was about a 1924 model. And he was going to teach his wife to drive. And she got in it out here one day and took it along the road, went to turn it round in the centre there, got it in reverse, put her foot on the accelerator and sort of panicked, and she shot over the curb, up the bank, through Mr. French's hedge, and the Austin 7 was standing out on the lawn.
Oh dear.
I can always remember that.
She
learned to drive. She didn't do any more that day, but she did learn to drive after that.
Oh.
Yes. Funny enough, that was... I don't know if you remember that Mr. Poole was sanitary inspector.
I know all about that because I'm friends with his daughter Grace.
Oh,
now,
oh, yes.
We go to concerts together.
Oh, yes, yes.
He's in the choir that I belong to, and I have quite a lot to do with Grace, so I know about her father.
Yeah, well, this little Austin belonged to him. And I can't remember now whether he retired or I don't know what happened, but I know he wanted to sell it, and if I remember right, he wanted £10 for it, and my brother bought it off him, you know. £10?
Yeah,
yeah. Didn't the Pools live in Hastings Road when we were at school, or when I was at school?
In Harriet Village.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Mm.
And then he had a bungalow built in Hemel Green Road, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah.
And that's where he was when my brother bought the car. Down there.
Okay.
Yes. So I remember he used to come when I was working at Russell's then, and as I said, he used to be the sanitary inspector, and we used to slaughter our pigs at the slaughterhouse there, and he had to inspect it to make sure that it was, you know, for sanitation and that sort of thing.
Mm.
And he used to come in about once a year, and he'd say, "You'd better put a bit of whitewash around the walls." And that was it, you know, that was the sanitation those days. You just used to get a syringe with a bit of whitening and syringe the walls down and carry on with your pig slaughtering. And
and that was it?
Yeah, that's right, yes, yes.
And you helped with the actual slaughtering, did you?
Yes, as a matter of fact, most of the time I did most of it myself. Because when I first went to work for Russell, he had a man working there by the name of Johns. I don't know if you can remember that at all. And he was a queer man. Apparently, he was worth quite a bit of money, and yet he sort of worked. Well, he lived at Tunbridge, and he'd come to work. Maybe for two or three days, and then perhaps he just wouldn't turn up, and we perhaps give him a couple of days and he didn't turn up, and then Mr. Russell said to me, "You better go down to Tunbridge and see what's the matter with Johns." And I used to have to get on the old trade bike and ride down to Tunbridge and find out what happened, and, "Oh, I'll be back on Monday," or something he'd say, and he'd come back. And at that time, he was a slaughterman, and I used to help him. And then I think Mr. Russell got a bit fed up with this, and he said to me one day, he said, "Do you think you could manage the slaughtering now with Reg?" That was Reg Granger. I don't know if you remember Reg Granger.
I don't.
No.
There's quite a family of Granger.
Yeah, well, he was working with us at the time. He was only a youngster, he hadn't been working there long. And he said, "If Reg helps you, think you can manage?" So I said, "Yes." He said, "Right." He said, I won't have John back anymore then." And when he did come back, he told him he didn't want him. But I know he carried on something alarming. Said I'd stolen his job and I'd put him out of work and all sorts of things. Anyway, from that time on, I used to do all the slaughtering. We only used to do pigs, you know, the rest we bought in, but I did that until I was called up for the war, you know, yeah. And, yes, we, and then another, I don't suppose you remember this, there was another George Russell, used to work at the potteries. You remember the potteries up there?
Yes, vaguely.
Mm. Well, that belonged to Peters.
Philip Peters.
Philip Peters. That's Lawley's, I think, the shop now, isn't it?
In yes.
Monson Road, that's right. And they used to do all this earthenware stuff then. And this old George Russell, he was no bachelor. He was no relation to the other Russells at all, I don't think. And there was a little wooden bungalow up at the back of the shop there on the sort of bit of green, and he lived in there. And he wouldn't work with anybody in the daytime. He used to go to work at night on his own.
Really?
Yeah. And they said that he was the only man, I don't know if you remember the great big crocks they used to make, earthenware crocks, glazed inside. Well, I remember we used to have one, not as big as that big ones, but we used to have one for a bread thing to keep the bread in. And that
well,
sort of thing.
We did then, and I don't know what happened to it, but we did have one of these.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they said that this old George Russell, he used to make them perhaps that size, and they said he was the only man that could, what they used to call throw in a pot. He was the only man that could throw a pot that size.
Yeah.
The only man that got the strength. I suppose that's why they let him work as he wanted to, do it as he pleased.
Mm-hmm. They were 18 to 20 inches in diameter, if not a bit more, weren't
they? Oh, yes, yes. I should think some of those big ones he made must have been...
Quite 2 feet.
Yeah, oh, easy that, I should think.
Mm-hmm.
Quite 2 feet. More than that, perhaps, some of them.
Yeah.
And probably about, you know, this tall, great big things.
About 3 feet.
Mm, mm.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, ours wasn't as big as that. I should think it was 2 foot 6 high.
Mm.
And I suppose in the widest place it would have been 2 feet in diameter.
Yes. Yeah, because they used to bulge out, didn't
yes,
they? And then come
right.
up in the front,
mm.
yeah. Yeah.
Yes, that's where that must have come from, you know?
Yeah. Well, I suppose it did, because as far as I know, they were... Well, not round here locally anyway. There's nowhere else I knew where they made them, only up there. And
yes, we kept our bread in it for years.
Yes, yes.
And my mother used to pickle eggs in a similar
So did my mother, yes. And I can remember my mother used to pickle them when they were 10p a dozen.
Well, that's what she did. You
yeah.
got them when they were really cheap.
That's
and
right, yeah.
them for
yes.
the time when they were going to be a bit more expensive.
That's right, yeah. yeah. She used to do them in water glass.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right, yes. Yes. And I know, I remember sometimes that water glass after a time used to come right through the crock and used to look like frost on the outside of the crock. Do you remember that?
I remember it looking opaque anyway
mm.
after a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
Something in it, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I never really knew how that was made, water glass, I mean, but it used to keep the eggs, didn't it?
It did. Mm.
Mm.
Yeah. But of course, going back to your job at the shop, you went everywhere on a bike, I suppose.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We had, well, trade gradually increased. Oh, I was talking about French, wasn't I? Because he was a man that we got friendly with him, and he was a rare one to rush around to get new customers. If there was a house empty and he'd rush around to find out when somebody was coming in. And funnily enough, he never ever bought meat from Russell. He used to deal with Hill with this. But he always used to come to me and say, "Oh, Jim, somebody's moving in so-and-so tomorrow. You better be round there." And so I used to go around and I used to rush about like him and get all the new customers. I said, so of course, trade kept increasing, and we had to take on more staff. And oh, I think we got, I don't know, 5 or 6 trade bikes, and rushing around, you know, all over the village. And because one of the first jobs I had there when I first went there full time was cleaning the hooks and scrubbing the baskets. I hated those jobs.
Oh,
yeah.
Not nice at all.
No. So I had to sort of work my way up, so I got out of those jobs and somebody else did it, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, after a time, French got rid of his horse and cart. He had a motorbike sidecar. And I was quickly getting into motorbikes a bit then. And we were both interested in football, and Tunbridge Wells Rangers Football Club was going then. And she used to say to me, they often used to play on a Wednesday afternoon, and I had Wednesday afternoons off. And she used to say, oh, can you get down a bit early, Jim? Help me with my afternoon round. We'd go in and watch Rangers play. I used to do that. I'd try and finish a bit early on the butcher's, rush up, ran with him with the milk, and then used to get off into Tunbridge Wells to watch Rangers play. And as I say, that's how we sort of got quite friendly. You know, I never really knew what happened to him in the end.
No.
I don't know whether he moved away or, you know, he must have done, I think, because I think he sold out like a lot of dairy did to these bigger companies, I think, and then he must have moved away.
That probably happened at the beginning of the war, because that's what my uncle Bob Young had to do. There were 4 dairies down at Peacehaven, and they had to amalgamate.
Yes.
And 3 of the men, of course, including him, they were called up and had to go in the forces.
Yes.
That's probably what happened to some extent.
Probably what happened there, I think. Yes, that's right. Yes. Yes, probably did. Because I think, because he used to be Bennett's, didn't
there? There used to be a number of dairies.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And some, of course, carried on until after the war.
That's right, Farrington did, didn't he? And
yeah.
Harold Brooks, well, he took over Bennett's, didn't he?
That's right.
He carried on, like, not long ago since he gave up, didn't it?
Well, yeah, over, is it 2 years now?
It might be, but it's not awful a long time anyway, is it?
Mm. Yes. But there was Myland, they had a dairy, didn't they?
Mm, that's right.
And the French.
Yeah.
So,
talk about Myland's, we had Myland's, used to deliver to us at Colts Hill. And just after the war, this is when old Mr. Myland used to come round. You know, Eric's dad.
Oh, yeah.
And it was when, I don't know whether milk was rationed or it was very short anyway. And anyway, it was when Jill was born, the morning Jill was born. And we wanted some more milk. So I called him at the door and I said, oh, Mr. Marland, I said, could we have an extra pint today? So he said, no, I'm afraid I haven't got spare, he said. I'm sorry, he said, but no, you can't. So I said, oh, well, all right. Anyway, I said, tell your wife that we've got a baby daughter, will you? Oh, he said, you better have an extra pint then, hadn't you? So we got our extra pint because Jill was born that morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't help at the bakery at all when your father had
to. No, you see, I was only a school kid then, and I used to go down with Dad. He used to go down sometimes they used to go down and make the dough overnight and leave it in the troughs. And then he used to go down, oh, I don't know, I think it was about 4 o'clock in the morning or something, and get it out and start moulding it and getting it in the oven cooking. Sometimes on a Saturday I'd go round on the rounds with him, you know, and that sort of thing. But apart from that, no, I didn't have anything to do with it.
He lived with that lovely smell.
Yes, that's right.
So the bakery along on the Hastings Road was right at the back of where the garage is now.
That's right.
Walkers would have their draper shop in front. Of what is now the car showroom.
That's right. They had the shop, which is the showroom, and then their house was behind that, and the bakery would be behind their house.
Oh, was it?
Mm, yes, it really. I think if I remember right, it all joined up. I don't think there was any sort of entrance in between the two places. Yeah, I think it all joined the brickwork. But as I say, it was the house, Walker's house, and then the bakehouse, and of course over the top was the loft where they used to store the flour and the great big bars of salt and that then, and all that sort of thing. But no, I didn't have much to do with it, and of course, as I say, Dad was out of it before I got into baking at all. My eldest brother, the one that had that Austin, he helped a bit. As a matter of fact, he, because he worked at Penn's for a while.
Did he?
Mm. And then he got married. He got married rather young, 19 I think he was, to a girl at Flimwell, and he worked over there for a baker. And then the baker, I don't know what happened, whether he, I can't remember whether he was an old chap or not, but he gave up for some reason, and my brother took the business over, and he ran his own little baker's business over there for a time, and then he gave it up, and he went on the, I think mostly from then on he was working in tubs as a barman. He worked at the Camden for quite some time as a barman, yes.
Mm.
Mm.
And you used to go around and collect orders for the butcher, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yes.
And a lot of times we had some customers that, well, to be quite honest, they were a bit of a nuisance, because they used to say, if I went round on a Monday and I'd say, take the order for tomorrow, and they'd order something, and then by the time you got there, maybe it was 10 o'clock in the morning or something, they'd realise then that they wanted something else for dinner that day as well. So could you go back to the shop and get it? So, of course, then we used to scoot off back on the old bike and back up with it, and I'll tell you, sometimes, especially if you've got a wet day, by the time you've done that, all the morning you'll be just about wringing wet through.
Yeah. You have to courage the miles, really.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't carry all that number of orders in your bike.
No. You used to take so many. You used to sort of do it in rounds. You'd go, one round would go from a spot here to a spot there, and you'd do that one, and then go back and get another load, and go out and do that one, and so on,
Mm.
And of course, when you got several of you, you used to different directions. One lab would go one way, and one the other.
Different parts of the village.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I know you used to come for a midweek order, and then go back with the order for the weekend.
That's right. And a lot of times, a lot of people, they used to have a delivery sort of nearly every day.
The big houses, aren't
they? Well, no, even the small houses.
Really?
Yeah, so you're delivering nearly every day.
Mm.
you know, when you think about it, they got a lot of service those days.
Okay.
Because I can remember Mr. French. He used to do three rounds a day round Pembury.
Yes.
Yes. He used to do one first thing in the morning, another one around midday, and another one in the afternoon. And I can always remember old Mrs. Rendell.
Yeah.
She used to have half a pint each day, each time he went. So he used to go three times for a pint and half a milk.
Yeah. Of course, you see, they didn't have fridges or anything.
No.
So I suppose they
had to boil it or something else they wanted to keep. So I suppose that was really Well, the only way they could do it, I suppose, was to have it as fresh as they could like that, wasn't it?
And you often had it dished out to you into a jug, didn't
you? Oh, yeah, always did then,
not
yes.
Bottles, was it?
No, you used to have what they called a hand can, take it round with the old measures hanging inside, and then the lady used to come with her jug and just tip it in with the measure, you know.
I remember Harold doing it that way.
Yeah. That's right, yes. Oh, yes. And as I say, 50 years ago I was called up.
50 years ago today?
That's right, yes. 50 years ago today, yes. 5 years in the army. And when I came home on leave once, Mr. Russell had left a message he wanted to see me, and I went round and he said, I sold the business to Mr. Lyne. I don't know if you remember Lyne at Matfield.
Yeah.
And he said, your job will be there when you come back. So I said, all right, fair enough. Yes, Mr. Lyne said all he could offer me was a ransom's job. And as I'd been, second in command, Mr. Russell, I expected to take a job like that. So I refused it. And a day or two afterwards, I was walking along the village, the high street, and walking by Hills, the butchers, and George Fagg, he was running the shop then for Mrs. Hills, because Mr. Hills had died during the war. And he called out to me, and I went to the door to chat to him, and then Mrs. Hill said, was I looking for a job? And I said, yes. And she said she could give me one, and so I went there, and I stayed there until 1973.
Okay.
That was from 1946. Then, because in 1972, twice I had little dizzy turns in the shop, and I mentioned it to my wife, and she said, I think you should see the doctor, she said. You might fall on a knife or something. So I made an appointment for Dr. Lodens at 5:30 on a Wednesday evening. And I went up there, and he said, after he checked me up, he said, how did you come up here? And I said, in the car. And he said, did you drive it up? And I said, yes. He said, well, you can't drive it home, you're not fit enough. My wife will take you home, and I'll send an ambulance for you. Get somebody to collect your car. And by 7:30 I was in intensive care in Kent and Sussex. And on the Friday morning they took me to Guy's Hospital and fitted me with a pacemaker. And that was 18 years ago last month. And I've been on a pacemaker ever since. So I suppose anything could have happened if I hadn't gone to the doctors.
Yes.
Never know these things, do we?
It's marvellous, isn't it, really?
Yes.
When you think about
that. Yes, it is. Yes.
So, you carried on a little while after?
Well, I stayed there for about a year at the butcher's. And then things got a bit rough. We joined the common market. Prices increased an awful lot. Trade went down. And there was only Mr. Bruce and I there then, and he said to me several times, there's not really enough for both of us to do here. And so I said, well, why don't you make me redundant? But he wouldn't do that. So, and of course it was no good asking for a rise, and we were finding it, you know, more difficult to live on the wages I was getting. And so I decided I'd have to look for something else. Well, I'd only got 2 years before retirement, so I thought it's pretty hopeless. Anyway, Tim, you know, Jill's husband now, he was down there, places before he was married to Jill, and he was working at Bert Stigmatz, the optical place. I happened to say to him, well, there's no chance of an old chap like me getting a job in there, and he said, I'll find out. And he came the next day and said, I got to see the personnel officer. I went in and they sorted me out a nice little job, which was sitting down job, just measuring the blanks that they use for the lenses. I started work there at 8 o'clock in the morning and finished half past 4, which was about 3 or 4 hours less than I did at the butcher's, and quite a lot more money. So that was a good move, really.
It's a nice way to end up your working
That's right.
Day.
Well, I didn't end it then, because I said I wouldn't mind doing some part-time when I was 65. And I had several, I had to go to and fro to guys quite a lot, because I had a lot of trouble with my pacemakers for a start. And when I came out once, the personnel officer said, I'm afraid I've got some bad news for you. So I said, well, what do you mean? So she said, well, Pilkington's, that's the glass people, they were the people that owned Bert Stigmatz, say haven't got to take on any more part-timers. So she said, it's a case of either you can stay on full-time, or you'll have to leave. And I thought, well, I'm pensionable, so if I stay on full time, I should lose a lot of my pension. So I said, well, I'll leave then. The next day my supervisor came along and said, what's this about you leaving, Jim? So I said, well, Mrs. Gibbons said that you can't take on any more part-timers, it's a new rule of Pilkington's. They said, well, we can always bend these rules, can't we? I said, well, can you bend it then? So he said, I should think so. And he came back a little while after and he said, what about doing Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Thursdays and having the rest of the time off? I said, suits me fine. So I did that until I was 70.
Did you?
Yes. So that was very nice, you know.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It was rather different from when you first started work, because you had to work long hours,
didn't it? Oh, not half, yes. Yes, I can remember, especially when we first got married, I'd only got a push bike, and we went to Colts Hill to live, because we went down as soon as we got married into that bungalow.
Oh, did you?
Yes, it was a new bungalow, we went straight into it. Mm. And, we used to work till about 10 o'clock on Friday night, preparing all the orders for Saturday, and I had to be back up there at 5:30 Saturday morning. So I used to have to bike home from 10 o'clock, sort of have something to eat and wash and go to bed, get up in the morning, shave. You always used to shave in the morning so you would look a bit decent, you know, and be back up there at 5:30, start work Saturday morning. So we put in, I should think, nearly as many hours in those 2 days as what most people put in a week now.
Yes. Yeah. What time did you finish on a Saturday?
Well, we originally used to finish at 9 o'clock. We used to shut at 9. And then Mr. Russell said one day, he said, no, these people get here at 9 o'clock, they could get here at 8 o'clock. They put a notice up, after such and such a date, we would be closed at 8 o'clock on Saturdays. And all the customers got there, so he gave it a little while, and then he said, well, if they can get here at 8 o'clock, they can get here at 7 o'clock. So we put on it, and they all got there at 7 o'clock, and finished up. We used to close at 6 on Saturdays, and all the customers still got there, but it's funny, they just leave it the last minute, some people,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah. And of course, I suppose some of them left it for a late Saturday evening.
Well, there again, you see, there was no fridges, or very few people got fridges in that then. Because I remember one time, one hot summer, he used to open 2 hours on a Sunday morning for people to fetch their joints. We didn't deliver anything, but he would open for 2 hours for them, come and collect them. Then, of course, we never had a fridge, you see. We only had an ice box.
Oh, yeah.
And this, like it was, the actual cabinet was the same as a fridge now, but there was a big, great big tank in one end with a opening at the top with a thing that went on the top of the tank. And you used to have to get ice from the ice company, which was down Good Station Road in Tunbridge Wells. And old Sam Martin used to bring that for us. Well, you know, in the summer, he'd get a hundredweight of ice, and by the time he got to our place, he'd stop there, stop there. We'd only got about half hundredweight left because it had melted. And we used to have to chop it up with a spiker. And take it up in buckets and put it in this tank. But by Monday morning, all you got was a tank of cold water. I mean, the ice had all melted, and so it really didn't keep your meat like it, nothing like you can do now with the fridges. And I know we thought it was wonderful when we had our first fridge.
You can't remember when that one was taken.
No.
Never mind.
No. I can tell you who fitted it though. Mm-hmm. Mr. Russell from that lived in Amberley's Drive. Ted Russell.
Oh, really?
He fitted it, yes.
Mm.
Yes.
And that was down at Russell Street.
That's right, yes. Yes. Oh. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it was a great step forward, wasn't it?
Oh, wasn't it just? Yes. Mm. Yes. Then of course we gradually from our trade bikes, I'd got into motorbikes a bit myself then, and I'd got a 550cc aerial, and I persuaded Mr. Russell to have a box sidecar made, and we fitted this box sidecar onto it, and we delivered with motorbike and sidecar, and after a few years we went up to a van, of course, and the man that do you know at Pembury Hall, up in the back there's a wooden bungalow, you know, as you go up and you go by Pembury Hall and you go round to go up towards Kennard Wilson's place, and there's a little road shoots off to the left, just at the bottom there. Well, up in there, there's a wooden bungalow.
Okay.
Mm. And this Mr. Busbridge, he did live at Hawke Well, and he built that bungalow up there, and he used to hire some of the fields there which belonged to Pembury Hall, and he kept a few old cows. And I could never understand him, because he was a marvellous carpenter, and yet he just used to scrape a living with these few old cows. He did anything that Mr. Russell wanted to do, and he built that sidecar for us. He built us a fridge right at the back. He built all the counters that we wanted and all things like that. And why he didn't sort of carry on with that, I could never understand. But he poodled on with these old cows. And
you prefer that way of life?
Yeah, I suppose so, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did you serve many big houses in the village that have gone, sit now?
Yeah, but I don't think we served too many of them, because I think Hills had sort of got monopoly of the big houses. They didn't seem to change hands at all.
No.
Most of the people sort of stayed there for a long time, and he was had the trade for a long time, and he just didn't change, you know.
Mm.
There's certain ones we used to serve, Pembury Hall, that was Davidson Houston, that's right, and what's Kent College now? Who had it then?
Vernon?
Vernon, that's right, yes. He was managing director of Spillers, wasn't he?
I believe he was.
Yeah, that's right, yes. He used to serve them. And then we carried on. Oh no, that was before the war. And after the war, I served them as Kent College from Bruce's, you know.
Oh, yes.
What other ones? Oh, then you get some, what's name, like Knights Ridge. That's all pulled down now, isn't it?
That's
right. You see, that's quite a biggish house to serve. And, Knight's Place, no, I never served there, no. In fact, that's where my wife was born there. You know the little cottage where Hedge used to live?
Mm-hmm.
She was born in that cottage.
Was she?
Yeah, her dad was gardener there.
Oh.
And I think they didn't serve them very well, I don't think, because he joined up. I believe he volunteered in the First World War, perhaps that was the thing. And then Mrs. Bardin had to get out of the place. And that's how she came to go down to Peter's Cottages, where I said she lived like
yeah.
before.
Was that what they were called?
Peter's Cottages, yes.
From
Philip's Cottages. That's right, yes, mm-hmm. yes. Yes.
Rex Turner was talking, it was because he lived just a little higher up when he was young, on the same side.
Yeah, where she's standing.
Talking about pumps, coming to get the water from the pump, not having running water.
Did they then?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes.
And you had running water
then? Yes, we had running water then, of course. Rex lived there before that, because when we were at Lower Green, Rex was over his new shop sort of thing then,
oh,
you know.
Right, yes.
Mm.
Mm.
Yes, so that was a bit earlier, wasn't it, when he had the pumps and that there.
Yes.
Mm.
Do you remember the sweet shop?
Mrs. Ellis? Did
yes.
Did she go in with her halfpennies?
Yes. She had to sell quite a trade for the children.
Oh, she did. She did, yes. Mind you. I don't suppose they needed a lot of profit to live then, did they? That's,
no.
You know, when you think she'd sell you a halfpenny worth of sweets or a penny worth and that, and there couldn't have been a lot of profit in that, and you've got to sell an awful lot. The kids used to go in an awful lot there for that sort of thing.
Yeah. And it was only really the front room of the house,
wasn't
that's
it? All, yes. Oh, yes, it was. Yeah, well, that's all with Rex's place, was it, when they first had it, because they had a shop, didn't they?
Mm.
And what's home, the front room there.
And then at one point there was a butcher's shop a little higher up, wasn't there, where Whittingham lived? In that cottage that juts out a little bit.
Oh, well, did that used to be a butcher's shop?
I understood it to be. Or was it a fishmonger's?
To be quite honest, yeah. To be quite honest, I don't remember it. So, whatever it was good, because all I can remember was Wickenden used to live there, because there was the old Wickenden family lived there, and then Frank that's around the corner here. His mother and father and family lived in the one next door.
Oh.
I think the one was George and Alice.
Yes.
And there was another sister lived with him, she went a bit funny.
Oh, that's
you remember
the
her,
one we call Old Sue.
That's right, yeah. He used to walk to Tunbridge Wells
Well,
and that, looking for her husband or something, didn't she?
Yes,
yes that's right,
yes.
Yes. Mm. Yes, they lived there. So I don't remember that ever being a shop.
You don't?
No.
No. I've got an old photograph of it.
Have you?
Yes.
Mm, yes.
That must have been just before
my time, I expect, yes. Mm.
Also, just recently, I've been given an old photograph of the King William that I'd never seen before.
Oh.
And it was taken in the 1920s when that cottage was in the
in the garden, sort of thing at the side.
Not the one joining on. No.
Oh no, the other one.
The car park. No.
Yes, yes.
There was a detached house.
That's right. Yes. Mm. Yes, that's right.
Weatherboarded.
Yeah.
And this is.
Well, I didn't say something in Bedford lived there, wasn't it?
That's right. I just remember it.
Yes.
I couldn't remember what the front of it looked like. My recollection of it was of me as a small child talking to Mrs. Bedford at the back door.
Yes.
And I could only remember that part of it. So I'm rather pleased to have this photograph.
Yes, I'm sure you are, yes.
It's the whole of the front is. But there were very few windows in it. It must have been very dark.
Well, I think a lot of those houses were then, weren't they?
I suppose. Do you remember the old black houses?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that's where my mother-in-law kind of lived when she first came to Penry, got married, because my father-in-law's people lived in them, apparently, Barden. I don't remember that at all. So, you know, I know from what my mother-in-law told me, because there was, because I was there, lived in one of them, didn't he? Oh, Abel Robinson.
And Betsy.
That's right, yes, yes.
Not that I remember, but that
yeah, old Abel used to he'd stand and look up in the sky, you know, and he'd stand, and all of a sudden he'd shoot off at 50 miles an hour up the road, and then he'd suddenly stop and have another look round. And I think, if I remember right, he used to pump the organ at the church.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, you're related to the Kerrs.
Oh yes, yes.
They have been in the village for hundreds of years, haven't they?
Yes, yes. Well, I think my grandmother, Curbside, was a reader, and I think they had various farms around Matfield and various places, and I think that Alban's farm belonged to them. When my grandparents lived there, I think my grandfather was only sort of managing it for them. I mean, I'm sort of going back about different things I heard, and a lot of this is when I was pretty young. I haven't taken much interest since, but I think that's what happened. And then I suppose, see, Rumford Farm, I think that used to be a pub years ago, didn't it?
The foresters
used to, and I think I've got an idea Rumford Farm did years ago. And whether that, you know, came available for them to buy or something, I don't know, but they went up there and well, they did buy it because it belongs to them now. And
but it must be pretty old.
Oh yes. Yes, yes. Yes, I don't know how old. Of course, there used to be two houses there, because the Kerrs, Uncle Ben and his family lived in this end, and the other end the Maltese family lived.
Oh.
And then I believe, if I remember right, the Maltese family moved there because my uncle got a job at Beckett's Grove at Matfield, and there was a house going with it, and they moved out there. And then they sort of knocked the two houses into one, and made it, because, you see, Uncle Ben had nine children.
Did
he? So, you know, there was quite a big family for one house, wasn't there?
Yeah. He lived until he was 90,
didn't
he?
Yes, yes.
I know my father used to like getting around and talk to him.
Yeah. I think my mother beat him, I think. I've got an idea he lived to 92. My mum was 94, I think.
That's
right. Yeah, Dad was 89. So they lived pretty good, long life, didn't they, really?
Yeah. I was very interested. 3 or 4 years ago now, I was doing a course at Tunbridge, a Kent University course on history, and we had the court records, and I borrowed them and brought them home for round about 1519 in the first Elizabeth time. And one of the entries that I read was concerning, I think it was a John Curd, who was attacked by robbers on Rowley Hill.
Oh, really?
All those years ago. Probably.
The families go right back as far as that.
Yeah.
It's something I've never wanted to do, to trace families back. Some people are very keen on it, aren't they? But I said to my wife, I said, you never know what you might come up with. Start tracing things back. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Better left alone, I think.
Oh dear, yes, you never know quite what you're going to find in the family.
No, no. My grandfather on Dad's side, the Youngs, he was gardener at Pembury Hall when the Woodgates were the vicars.
Yes, yeah,
I said to Mrs. Davidson Houston about that, and she said, oh, I can't remember him, she said. So when I went there to meet one day, she called me. She was sitting out in the front with somebody else, and she called me, and I went across, and she said, oh, well, this is my elder sister. And she said to her, and this is Young, she said. He says his grandfather used to be gardener here. Can you remember him? And she said, oh, yes, I remember Young. She said, he used to do everything, she said, from doing the gardening to changing the nappies for the baby. So he was probably really an odd job man, you know, for everything, I suppose. Do this, do that.
Yeah. Wow. I was going to say, talking of cupboards, did you know that King William had the powder cupboards there?
No.
Where they used to powder their wheat.
No, I didn't know.
So that's a fairly old.
It must be, mustn't it? Yes, yes, yes.
But there aren't many houses in Pembury that go back that far.
No.
Not now, anyway.
No, because I suppose most of those that really old ones have just disappeared, haven't they, I suppose? A lot of them, anyway.
Yes.
I can remember... did you know the Browns that lived across the horse pastures?
I've heard talk of the Browns, and it wasn't Fred Archer's mother one of them?
That's right, yes. Yes, well, when I first started butchering, they lived in the old mill house, which was, well, I don't know how you can sort of place it really. It was sort of down in the hollows between Alban's farm and what was Baxter's farm. Because I remember I used to have to go on the bike, used to have to go to Pippin's, to Douse was there then.
Oh yeah.
Deliver there, and I used to have to go through the orchard, through another orchard, down a very sloping orchard, and this mill house was at the bottom of there.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe my Uncle Ben, I think, told me the mill got washed away when they had a bad storm and some flooding and that sometime, washed the old mill away and left the house there. Well then...
That was Keys Mill, wasn't it?
That's right, yes, mm. Yes.
Supposed to be a painting of it by Turner, I think.
Well, oh, was it? Yes, yes. Mm. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Well, then Brains moved up to the horse pastures. And I presume the old house is gone now that was there. I don't know. I've never heard of anybody living in it after that, so...
Well, and the house in the woodlands that was Bachelor's, that's all gone, isn't it? I remember a farmhouse down in the woodlands there that time.
Oh, Bassett's farm.
Mm.
That's all gone, yes. Yes, that's right, yes. Mm.
And of course Pitt's farm, that's gone.
Yes, that's right. Yes,
one.
Yes, it was, wasn't it? Yes.
Mm.
Did Russell used to live there one time?
I did.
Yeah, that was before Ernie Sturgeon then.
Yes.
Yeah, of course, there's quite a few of those that have disappeared, isn't there?
Yes, you see, really, the village had quite a number of farms in the centre. Hubble's Farmers Barn, you see.
That's right, yes, yes.
And Bailey's Farm, I mean, it's just the farmhouse.
That's it, yes, yes, the rest is gone, isn't it? It's all, well, built up or something, isn't it? And
they must have been quite small, but...
Oh, yes, I suppose really they're only more or less like, more, almost like small holdings, weren't they? But they seemed to get a living off them, didn't they?
That's right.
Possibly, you know, the man had another part-time job as well or something that used to see them through.
You see, my grandfather, I know he wasn't farming here, but he evidently used to go and kill the pigs at the hospital.
Yes, that's right, yes, 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 that sort of thing used to be done, didn't it? I mean, an awful lot of people used to keep their own pig, then had it killed, didn't they?
Because he kept a pig, I remember the pigs die in the garden.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh yes, I think most people did. We never did, but I remember my wife's father used to keep a pig up the garden at the back of their place, you know, and used to get it killed at Christmas because he wouldn't do for these days because he used to love it to be nice and fat. He used to get his pig fattened up, you know, and a bit down on the pork chops, fat a bit, that thick on it.
Yeah.
So bad for your heart now, wouldn't they?
That's right, Well, they were more self-sufficient in a way, weren't they?
Well, they were, yes. I mean, nearly everybody kept a few hens, didn't they?
Yeah.
And as you say, a pig, and they all used to grow their own vegetables and things, didn't they? And, but now, well, it's all gone by the board, isn't it?
It has, yeah.
I still grow what I can, but I'm finding that my garden's getting too big for me now, you know, it's more than I wanted to